Hallo på den. I dag har vi en skikkelig godbit fra arkivet. Det spilt inn med Tom-Erik Voie og Martin Tronsen i Tampa i Florida. Og vi har møtt han som startet den første tattoo-shoppa i Las Vegas. Den var åpen 24 timer i døgnet, 7 dager i uka og hadde 12 artister. Han laget også det første tattoo-reality-tv-programmet før Miami Ink, og før produsentene av Miami Ink stjal ideen hans og laget et av verdens mest kjente TV-programmer basert på hans oppskrift. Vi snakker om hvordan det er å være tatovør på 70-tallet, og hvordan han en gang tatoverte sin 5 år gamle sønn etter en bar-til-bar-runde. Dette en av de virkelig gamle sjørøverne fra en svunnen tid. Velkommen, Doc Dog!
My name's Doc Dog. This is my 50th year in tattooing. I think I started my or did my first tattoo in 1960. I was 13. I became a professional artist in 1973, opened the first shop in San Fernando Valley. 4 years later, we had been going to Las Vegas, and they didn't have any tattoo shops. It was not open for tattooing. It was kind of wasn't really illegal, but they didn't want us there, so it took about 18 months to open Vegas, but we became the first shop in Nevada in 1977. July 13th, 1977, we opened the first legal shop in Nevada, in Las Vegas. Been here in Tampa now for about 6.5 years, and like Tampa a lot, probably stay in Florida for the rest of my career. Nice people, nice customers.
You told me briefly about the television show.
Yeah, we did the first TV show before Miami Ink, before LA Ink and all that stuff. Actually, at the time, we were tattooing with the producers of Miami Ink, and they were kind of stealing our ideas. But we were on a year before Miami Ink ever came out, so we'd been on 2 years. And before Miami Ink came out, we were on about a year before they were even started up. So we're the first TV show. We did it locally. We had to pay for it ourselves. They called it more of an infomercial than a reality show. That was just kind of the way we got dealt the hand there. But we haven't done that for about 3 years now. But that was big fun. Good for business.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You have been in the industry for most of the time. It's been the industry. So what are your influences?
Gosh, I don't know, man. I just fell in love with it when the first time I ever seen it done. My influences would be guys like Bob Shaw, Colonel Todd, Bert Grimm, Zeke Owens, Don Ed Harding.
The old school guys.
All the old school guys, most of us are dead now. But that was really kind of the period I came in. It was still a closed trade. There was no tattoo magazine. It was very secretive. It was real, real hard to get in the industry. You had to know somebody or be somebody's cousin or something, but you had to married to somebody or something. But it was tough to get into, so there wasn't a whole lot of self-taught tattoo artists that became shop owners, and I am one of the few that I know of. Most of the rest of the people had apprenticeship one way or another.
Yeah.
I didn't. Man, I opened my first shop, thought I knew what I was doing. After 6 months, I realized I didn't know what I was doing, but I was lucky. I sold a shop to a guy called Philadelphia Eddie, another very, very famous tattoo artist out of Philadelphia. I sold a shop to him and then went to work for him. So really, that was where I kind of got my break, was right there, because that way I got introduced to the one supply company, Huck Spaulding, at the time, and learned how to make needles and do, basically everything that, a tattoo artist should know. But I, had people to teach it to me right. So for the first 6 months, I was just kind of shooting blanks and guessing. Yeah. Got a good little story for you. When I first started tattooing, there was this one place that I got ink from. It was called Spurl and Verzandi. Well, they just sold the ink, and back in that day, we didn't have the transparencies that we have today. So everything was done on plastic stencils. Well, you usually take a charcoal powder, rub it into things, and you press it on the skin, and you have a pattern. Well, when I bought this ink, one of them was called Black Tattooing Ink. Well, what it really was black tattooing powder for the stencil. So I mixed it up like the rest of the ink, started tattooing with it. So after about 90 days, I had customers that come back, you know, with the Black Panther, with, you know, crawling up your arm with the red scratches and the red eyes.
Yeah.
Well, after about 90 days, they were coming back, and the only thing that was left was the red eyes and the red scratches, no black at all.
So how was it working with, like, the powder stencils? Now, I talked with a guy in New York. You have to hold your breath for an entire tattoo, not to breathe away the stencil.
Well, that was kind of how it is. You accidentally wipe it, and your stencil was gone.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you'd see a lot of patterns that were kind of offset by about a quarter of an inch one way or the other, or they couldn't quite get it back on the right, you know. it was tough, but, you know, on the other hand, if you don't know anything different, you know, it's just how it was, and so you get to work with it, and you get used to it, and it's just the way it is, so you don't really think about it any other way, you know.
Your style, you know, how do you describe your style?
My style?
Yeah.
Sloppy. I have no style.
Yeah. So you like look at yourself as like strictly old school artist.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of on the cusp there, where the new school artists started coming in, and that was a lot due to Sailor Jerry.
Yeah.
And after World War II, a lot of people were coming back from Japan. A lot of sailors, they're back to Honolulu, and Sailor Jerry, that was where he was based, was Honolulu, and he was seeing the Jap work come back, and he started duplicating them. Once he did that, he knew enough artists, you know, generally like Bob Shaw, Burt Grimm, guys like that. They started getting a hold of it. Don Ed Harding, Don Nolan. Once that, I kind of come in at that cusp right there, it was changed from the old school to the new school.
Yeah.
So I was kind of one of the, I guess, the new school artists, but not the kind of new school you see today. You know?
No, of course.
Kind of the new school from what it was for centuries, you know, and then it started changing right around 1970.
Yeah.
So at that point, there was just kind of when I was getting into it, so I was kind of confused. I didn't really know where I was as an artist, you know. I mean, it's just we hadn't come up with the real realistic stuff yet. We thought a lot of that stuff would not wear right or, you know, just fade out. So we stayed to bolder lines and heavier shading, but not too much shading, and then the color. So I could say it just, I kind of come in there to where I was just sort of lost in the ozone there, you know. I was trying to accomplish the old school stuff, and yet throw in some new school stuff to it and make it brighter, finer lines, stuff like that, you know. I just don't think I was ever known as being, you know, a super top-notch artist, maybe back in the 70s and 80s, but past then there were so many good artists coming into it. I mean, that were really good artists. So just I've always been a steady, even artist, you know what I mean? But I always run high-quality shops, good customer service, friendly shops, you know, so. What I lacked in my tattooing abilities, I try to make up with my personality, my friendliness, you know.
Well, that's great. You have to be friendly. You work with a lot of people, so you have to be able to talk with them. So one thing I'm really wondering about is, you know, the way this industry has, you know, changed the last 3, 4, 5 years. You know, the Miami Ink, LA Ink, the commercialism around the whole tattoo industry. So what do you feel about the way it's changing?
Well, I don't really like it for one thing, you know. I mean, just on the simple fact that too many people want to be tattoo artists.
Yeah.
For all of us old guys that are trying to retire and stuff, we're finding ourselves just not retiring. We got to keep working because the money's so bad these days. There's so many shops.
Yeah.
There's really no qualifications to being a tattoo artist, you know what I mean? So it's like you got the good with the bad, but it's mostly bad. You have a few good artists scattered in there through there, but like I say, it's like I'm making less money now than I was making back in the 1970s. So for me, it's just like I say, it's just it's over flooded with tattooing, you know, and just with the, you know, the tattoo magazine and stuff. I mean, it does some good things too, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know. I mean, it allows artists all across the world or the country, anywhere, you know what I mean, to see what other artists are doing and things like that. But like you say, I wish it wasn't so popular. What really bothers me is shops that have 2, 3, 4, 5 apprentices, and it's just breaking more people into the trade that really don't even deserve to be in the trade. They're not really paying their dues, and it hurts us all, you know what I mean. It just becomes the same size pie cut up into so many pieces that it's just harder and harder to make a living in this trade, you know. It's just, I kind of wish Tattoo Magazine hadn't come out, and I wished it hadn't gotten so popular, but that would have been better for me, you know. Yeah. But it is what it is, and you make do with what you got, and you try to adapt and keep on going, you know. And we're a strong shop. We're probably one of the top three shops in Tampa, if not one of the top two shops. So like I say, it pushes that competition, but sometimes you get bad repercussions off of people's prices get too low and they get too hungry and then they start skimping on the tattoo to get done fast and, you know, to make up for that low price they're given. And, you know, it's, like I say, artistically it's probably good for the trade, financially it's not so good, you know.
All the other guys we talked to, all of them, you know, like the way it's going now, you know, because there's more customers.
Right.
And, you know, customers are probably, you know, more qualified to finding good pieces of art to get tattooed. So you're like the first guy that's...
Well, probably a lot of the people, I'm not saying all the people that you're interviewing, but a lot of them are not 62 years old, pushing 63.
Most of them are like tattooing for maybe 10 years.
Yeah, so they don't see what good it used to be.
No.
You know, they see where it is now and they think it's good, but the money was, like I say, it was just so much better back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, early 90s, till it all started kind of changing, you know. But right around 95, it started swinging the other way, and it was good for us for a while, as long as we were the only shop in Vegas.
Yeah.
It was great for us, you know. The shop was making killer money. Had 12 tattooers going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we were making a ton of money. But then more and more shops, so a shop opens, and now they've got a $45 minimum. This one opens their thing, and they get a $40 minimum, and pretty soon they get it down to where it's $10 minimum. They're not even paying for the materials. They're just trying to get people in the shop and stuff. And I say, for some people, you know, that don't have anything to compare it to, it probably is good now. But you compare it to somebody that's been in a trade for 50 years, and I'm telling you, it's not as good as it used to be, you know what I mean? So, and just people find that out when they get to retirement age, and they go, man, there's 20 shops down the street, you know?
What's, like, your favorite part about being in this job? You can call it a job, though.
Yeah, when I was younger, it was all the women that would come in and take their clothes off for me, and the money and the freedom. But the biggest thing to me has always been the freedom of being a tattoo artist.
Yeah.
Especially after tattooing Vegas for 23 years, all kind of tattoo artists were coming here from all over the world. I know people from all over the world, every country there is. You can't name a country that I don't know somebody in that I couldn't go stay with. So I love the freedom. I like the hospitality that people show me, that I show them when they're in town. And it's when you get into being a solid tattoo artist, man, and you do have a lot of friends everywhere, and you know, it's like, and you're kind of picky about them, you know what I mean? But everybody I know is good, solid tattoo artists. They do good things for the trade.
Yeah.
They're good, clean, sterile tattoo artists, know their stuff, and deal with people right, and you know, turn out a quality product. And you know, it's the kind of people I like to hang around with. And like I say, it's the freedom to me that, you know, sure ain't the money anymore, but you know, it's the freedom.
Yeah.
You know, that, man, I can travel anywhere. I can take my tattoo and stuff anywhere. Oh, you're Doc Dog, you know, and boom, I'm tattooing, you know, as simple as that. I've got a paycheck coming in, you know what I mean? But it's the freedom is the nicest thing about being a tattoo artist as far as I'm concerned. You know?
You know, you have a lot of tattoos yourself. Do you have one favorite tattoo?
I don't have any good tattoos. I don't have a favorite tattoo. It's just being tattooed that is my favorite, you know?
Yeah.
I've got a lot of demons, a lot of women on there. That's pretty much describes my lifestyle.
So
you know?
Have like a tattoo that's a good story?
Oh, they're all good stories.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's the funny thing about tattooing, you know, it's like as poor as my memory is, I can remember every tattoo I got, where I got it, who was there, even what the shop smelled like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The craziness that was going on that particular night. You know, even sometimes I can remember conversations that happened 35, 40 years ago. To me, it's my little time machine, you know. I can look at a tattoo and I can think of all the circumstances around it. They're all very clear. Unlike, you know, when I rode a motorcycle in the desert or crashed or something, you know. And I remember I crashed and I don't even remember what desert it was in, you know.
Yeah.
But with tattooing, it's a different story. It really leaves an indelible mark, not only on your body, but on your soul.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys are the same way. You probably don't have a tattoo on you. You couldn't tell me everything about that night you got it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's I don't really have a favorite tattoo.
But do you have a tattoo that's like a very crazy story?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I got my signature leg.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's like kind of all the good tattoo artists in the United States, some in Europe, signed my leg, you know.
Yeah.
So it, with each one of those, it's like, you know, somebody will go, man, I sure wish Guy Atchison would tattoo me. And I go, yeah, he tattooed me. He go, what'd he put on you? And I pull up my pant leg and it's Guy Atchison, you know what I mean? You know, it's like,
that's cool.
But, you know, I mean.
Can we see your leg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack Rudy Omar, man, here's a Guy Atchison, which you can't even read what it says, but
yeah.
And Dino Cook, there's Hannah Atchison, Pete Myers, Chicano from our Las Vegas shop in London, Mike Parsons, Mike Silva, Little Rat Lyle Tuttle, you know, Tony Olivas, Paul Jeffries out of Canada, and the list goes on, you know, yeah. I mean, there's a Zeke Owens is on the back, Bob Terrell.
You have Terrell. A fresh one on there.
Huh?
You have a fresh one.
That was
there.
A fresh one because from my female tattoo artist.
Yeah.
So I don't let a whole lot of people sign it, but I let her sign it. I don't know, man, I got more than I can remember on there. So yeah. I kind of go through them one by one and write them down one of these days so I can remember. Some people ask, I just whip out the list and read down it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I like those. My chest piece, I have a big ship on my chest. We came home, I came with the shop one morning. We started talking about, man, big pieces of stuff. I went home and I drew this, I painted it, cut a stencil on it, rode back to the shop on my motorcycle with the stencil. And we started on it about 8 o'clock at night. And Asa Lee Crow, this guy here, he's dead now. But he said it was the biggest piece he ever did. And we started outlining. We didn't really have a bench in the shop. So we had to take off the bathroom door, lay it between two chairs, and I had to lay on the damn bathroom door for about 10 hours, you know. But it was just party night all night long, man. We just, you know, smoking doobie after doobie and, you know, hitting drink after drink, you know. And just let it roll and had a good time, man. And just after I was done, I was hurt so bad. They took me next door, man, where we had a shop there in the valley, San Fernando Valley. We had a bunch of little massage parlors there and stuff and bars and the tattoo shop. They took me next door to one of the massage parlors and got me whatever they get in a massage parlor, you know what I mean? And I don't remember any of it, you know what I mean? I don't remember none of it yet. Just up to that part, but then I kind of remember going into the massage parlor. I don't remember much after that.
You told us you don't hear so good on the air because you got a gun going off?
I had a place up in Texas, and I had 40 acres up there. And it wasn't like I was in a fight or somebody shot me in the ear.
Okay.
It was just we were shooting guns, and I was letting somebody shoot my eye. I got an elephant gun, you know, a big 375 H&H gun. And I was standing by the truck, and they had just jacked a cell in there, and I dropped something. And when I stood up, they pulled the trigger, and the barrel was about that far away from my ear when I stood up, and it just blew my eardrum out. Pretty much deaf in that ear now, you know what I mean? But generally, the conversations aren't that good with most people anyhow, so I don't really care that I can't hear them. It's all right. I just nod my head a lot.
And go,
What
are your future plans now? You just stay here? You like Florida and Tampa, so...
What do I do here at the shop? Not much, you know. I watch a lot of TV. I watch my artists. I talk to them. I try to tell them better sales methods. If I see any way that I can improve their work for them, if I see them doing something wrong, you know what I mean? I give them whatever knowledge I can, you know what I mean? For that 50 years of knowledge, I don't want it to just go away, you know? So I try to share that with my people. And I guess you'd call me quality control, and that's what I do, is just watch my tattoo artists. Occasionally I do a tattoo on collectors and stuff like that. Not as good as I used to be, but I'm still okay, you know? People are still semi-happy with my work. And it's like, you know, they can't be unhappy because they ask me, what are you going to put on me, Doc? And I tell them, man, that's some old fucked up tattoo. So, you know what I mean? How are they going to complain? You know, they look at the head, it's an old fucked up tattoo. I say, well, I told you it was going to be an old fucked up tattoo before we started, you know what I mean? So
you've always been like a street shop, like open from 6 to midnight? And...
Yeah, with the shop, yeah. So generally, my other shops that we deal with, I've opened them earlier and closed them, you know, around 10 or midnight or something like that, except for the Vegas shop, which I say we ran 24 hours a day just about, 7 days a week. But, man, you know, we had the business for it. I say, you know, you could open up all night here and just, you know, sit here and drink coffee and starve to death.
Yeah, of course.
It really doesn't make any sense.
No.
I don't like to overwork my tattoo artists, and I'm not greedy. So if we can get by working you know, 6 days a week or 5 days a week, 6 hours a day, then I'm all for it, you know, because then it gives me more freedom to do what I want during the daytime and stuff like that. A couple of my artists have kids. I like to see them spend time with their family. I don't want to work them to death, as long as they're making a decent paycheck. And, you know, I keep the hours low.
So you still ride a motorcycle?
No, I gave that up about 10 years ago. I got into yachting.
Yeah.
And I like being on the sea.
Do you have like a captain cap?
No, I don't wear the captain's cap, man. No, I wear a pirate's hat. Yeah. No, but I like being at sea a lot. We did a lot of, before we moved here to Florida, man, when we were in Vegas, I had a big boat, a 70-footer. And we kept that in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and we cruised the Mexican Riviera, you know, Acapulco and Manzanillo and Puerto Vallarta and Cabo San Lucas and all, you know, the whole Riviera thing, you know. And we just go to one port, pick up a bunch of girls, go out to sea, man, bring them back, drop them off, pick up some more, head down to the next port, you know. Restock our beer, you know, and we on down the road we went, yeah. And go catch marlins. That's all for 5 years. That's all I did is just fish for marlin. You know, I don't know, man. I kind of that being at sea, man, it was always more exciting than riding motorcycles. But
yeah,
I don't know. I rode bikes from the time I was, I guess, 16 to the time I was 50.
So I'm looking at some pictures
there. Ah, yeah.
That's
my son. Yeah, mom was out of town one night. That's Colt's mom right there, and she was out of town, man, for the weekend. So I was watching Colt, and I told Colt, hey, well, what do you want to do? He goes, hey, well, let's jump on a bike and go bar hopping, Dad. So I said, okay, man. So we started going to all the topless saloons and shit. I walked in there with my five-year-old kid and shit, and everybody knew me and shit. Hey, well, you can't have your kid in there. Yeah, we're going to have a Coke and we'll leave, you know. So we'd have a beer. So what are you going to do? And he goes, let's go to the tattoo shop, get tattooed. I said, okay, man. So I went to the tattoo shop. He was 5 years old. I tattooed a little star on him that night, and he tattooed his name on my signature leg, Colt.
So how old is he now?
He'll be 24 February 11th.
So the star is still looking good.
His star moved from here up to about here.
Yeah, I would think so.
But he's got a sleeve here, but Mike sleeved him, put a nice dragon on him and stuff.
Yeah.
And but we left a little cloud right around the little star's original tattoo, so it's still there, yeah. Still hanging in there. Well, you know, you were so small, if you didn't really, you know, if you weren't looking for it, you really wouldn't see it. It looked kind of like maybe like a little mole or something. It was just a tiny little, probably 16th of an inch by a 16th of an inch, you know. But I always thought, you know, if something happened to him, that would be, no matter how much time went by, you'd still be able to identify him by that mark.
Yeah. You know? So he's still a tattoo artist today.
Yeah, he's a good tattoo artist too. But yeah, he'll be one of the up-and-coming names here probably in 5, 6, 8 years, like that.
Well, he has to be good if he started when he was 5.
Yeah. But he didn't really take it seriously till he was about 17. And then he started. He'd been drawing all that time, but when you're 17, you really start drawing more and really getting interested and want to go to the shop with me every day and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he was 5 years old, he just bust out tattooing, you know what I mean? But
would you think that when you were growing up with a lot of tattoos in the tattoo shop and his dad being a tattoo artist, he would end up being like a lawyer or something?
Well, that's what I was hoping for. actually, that's how we got on to Florida. When we lived in Vegas, I was trying to keep him out of tattooing. So I sent him to a private school over here in St. Pete, a military, naval military school, Admiral Farragut. So we sent him there for 2 years till finally he got so petty I took him out. But I really tried to keep him out of the trade because I see where the trade's going. And it's like I say, in all the ways it's getting better, and just as many ways it's getting worse, as far as trying to make a living off of it and actually really, you know. Yeah, I don't know. I appreciate you guys coming by and
thank you, Brian.
And doing a little bit on us there. You know, I mean, it's just,
so I like your jewelry.
I have my lion's head because I'm a Leo, you know, born in August and stuff. My wedding band from when my wife proposed to me.
Yeah.
I got my Rolex that one of my customers tipped me. It was a tip.
Whoa.
And then this year I had a whole bunch, because I used to take, especially when we first got to Vegas, I'd take jewelry and trade, you know.
Yeah.
And I wound up with about a cigar box, a small cigar box full of rings.
Yeah.
You know, and diamonds and different kind of shit. So I took out some of the better diamonds and I took it to this guy who was a jeweler and I belted down a few rings and made that one for me. My name is Doc Dog. I own and run Las Vegas Tattoo Company, and this is just a pretty much a normal day in the shop, you know. except for the interview, man. And then we only do that about once a week.